From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The U.S.'s belligerent posturing on North Korea has been an embarrassment at the Winter Olympics taking place in Pyeongchang, South Korea. Vice President Mike Pence's petulant disapproval of Korean unity was eclipsed by the poise of Kim Yo-jong, the sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. She appeared alongside South Korean leadership multiple times. When a unified Korean ice hockey team made its debut, Mr. Pence was stalwart in his refusal to stand up and show support for the team. A spokesperson for the vice president tweeted that he would rather, quote, stand and cheer for U.S. athletes than recognize, quote, the most oppressive regime on earth. My guest is John Pfeffer, co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C., and a Tom Dispatch regular. Welcome to the program, John.
Thank you for having me on the show.
So first, let's talk about what the two Koreas hoped to get out of the Winter Olympics and what led up to the sporting event in terms of diplomacy. I understand there were meetings between the leadership of North Korea and South Korea ahead of the Winter Olympics?
That's correct. Bottom line, I think North and South Korea would like to see their joint hockey team win a game, perhaps even achieve medal status. That would be a tremendous victory. But even without the joint hockey team doing well in the Olympics, already, the two Koreas have achieved certain of their goals. They marched together under the same flag. They've shown cooperation. They've had some important meetings. And as you pointed out, even before the Olympics began, North and South Korea had several lead-up meetings to discuss not only the Olympics, but other potential areas of cooperation. They restarted a hotline between the two countries. They talked about possible reunions of divided families. And the conversations may well last beyond the Olympics as well, as North Korea has invited South Korean leader President Moon Jae-in to visit North Korea and potentially lay the groundwork for a summit between the leaders of the two countries.
How historic is this? I mean, the two Koreas have been divided for a long time, and the U.S. has, of course, played a leading role in maintaining that division. So is this level of cooperation, these overtures to one another, are they quite historic?
Well, they're not unprecedented. Of course, the two Koreas have met before. There were discussions in the 1970s even about a confederal model of reunification, and then again, of course, in the late 1990s and leading up to the historic meeting in 2000 between Kim Jae-jung and Kim Jong-il. Also, what was seen potentially as the beginning of a new chapter in inter-Korean relations, which unfortunately became a different story altogether when we saw a kind of change in government eventually in South Korea, 10 years of conservative rule, and a change in North Korea as well, the death of Kim Jong-il and the replacement by his son, Kim Jong-un. And of course, change in U.S. policy as well, somewhat supportive of inter-Korean dialogue at the end of the 1990s, and then, of course, the election of George W. Bush and the inclusion of North Korea in the Axis of Evil. So we've had a lot of ups and downs, both in inter-Korean relations and between the United States and North Korea. What makes this important, of course, is because the stakes seem much higher. We seem to be much closer to the possibility of war between the United States and North Korea. So the prospect of the two Koreas sitting down and talking about peace and potentially even denuclearization is, a much welcome step backward from the precipice of conflict.
Hmm. Now, so the two Koreas had some diplomatic meetings ahead of the Winter Olympics. Let's talk about what the U.S. did ahead of the Winter Olympics, in particular Vice President Mike Pence, who essentially was the highest level representative from the U.S. at the Winter Olympics. Axios, a news outlet, published an exclusive report based on an anonymous aide from the White House that essentially said that, and it's likely this was deliberately leaked ahead of the Winter Olympics, but this Pence aide told Axios that the vice president will remind the world that everything the North Koreans do at the Olympics is a charade to cover up the fact that they are the most tyrannical and oppressive regime on the planet. At every opportunity, the vice president will point out the reality of the oppression in North Korea by a regime that has enslaved its people. We will not allow North Korea's propaganda to hijack the meaning of the Olympics, and so on and so forth. How do you view this? I mean, of course, the North Korean regime is dictatorial. No one really disputes that. But did this posturing, aren't we the ones that look idiotic and juvenile with this sort of posturing?
Well, certainly Pence's words were also an echo of what the president himself said in the State of the Union address. So this has been pretty consistently the Trump administration policy. There also wasn't a great deal of enthusiasm from the Trump administration about the two Koreas meeting after the beginning of this year, leading up to the Olympics, because there was a fear somehow that North Korea was using its so-called charm offensive to divide the United States and South Korea, to put some daylight between the positions of the two, with the hopes, at least from the North Korean side, that they'd be able to more effectively evade the sanctions regime and have a lifeline, if you will, thrown to them by the South Koreans economically, politically, geopolitically. But the bottom line is that the United States looks foolish in part because of its statements, but also in part because it hasn't even appointed an ambassador to South Korea. The most recent choice, Victor Cha, was reportedly taken off the list because he had not very much enthusiasm for a preemptive strike against North Korea, a preemptive strike which pretty much everyone recognizes. And when I say everyone, I mean policymakers, folks in Congress, Korea watchers, recognize as being a potentially catastrophic move by the Trump administration. So all of this suggests that the United States has actually been more responsible for putting daylight between itself and Seoul than North Korea was, or has been, simply because the Trump administration simply doesn't know how to handle Korean affairs, doesn't know how to appropriately respond to inter-Korean relations, and can't even get its act together to appoint an ambassador to South Korea.
Right. In addition to the Axios piece that I quoted, Mike Pence's office also announced that ahead of the Winter Olympics that the U.S. was prepared to, quote, unveil the toughest and most aggressive round of economic sanctions on North Korea ever. I mean, again, you have this sort of superlative language, the use of these extreme words, which is very much in line with the bravado, machismo, whatever you want to call it, coming out of the Trump administration, which, of course, would all fall to pieces if the Koreas were to turn around and opt for peace between the two nations instead of belligerence. So it seems as though the Trump administration is counting on continued tensions between the two countries.
Well, yes. On the other hand, Pence has indicated, as he has departed the Olympics, that there is still room for negotiations. I mean, how seriously we should take this, I don't know. But there have been several signs from the Trump administration that they're willing to sit down with the North Koreans, that this show of bravado, this show of machismo, as you put it, is simply an effort to kind of attract the North Koreans back to the negotiating table. So far, that hasn't worked. All it's done is actually push North Korea and South Korea closer together. But there is always that possibility. I mean, remember, the Bush administration came in with very similar hostile rhetoric about North Korea And again, as I said, put North Korea in the axis of evil back in 2002. And yet, even the Bush administration turned around by 2005, 2006, and launched negotiations with North Korea, first secretly, bilaterally, and then as part of six-party talks. So it's not inconceivable that the Trump administration could exercise a similar pivot, if you will. And Pence's more recent statements, as compared to the ones you quoted, suggest that such a pivot is still possible. In other words, that the Olympic truce, the truce that has taken place as a function of the Olympics, the suspension and postponement of U.S.-South Korean military exercises, North Korea's decision, it seems, not to launch any missiles or conduct any nuclear tests during this period of time, that it could be extended beyond the Olympics. As long as, well, as long as all three parties, North Korea, South Korea, and the United States, agree to such an extension.
So what about the representative of North Korea who appeared at the Winter Olympics, Kim Yo-jong? She is Kim Jong-un's sister. There's been a lot of media coverage of her. Some have called her North Korea's Ivanka Trump. She's seems to have won the popularity contest against Mike Pence. What role did she play as a surrogate for Kim Jong-un at the Winter Olympics, and was she successful in, you know, in a way sort of showing up the U.S.?
Well, I think she's very successful in terms of presenting a different face of North Korea to South Koreans. You know, the presentation of North Korea in South Korea tends to be even more demonic, if you will, than the presentation here in the United States.
Really? That's hard to imagine.
Well, I mean, of course, North and South Korea were involved in a very serious war in between 1950 and 1953, and a lot of people still remember that as a terrible time. And there was, you know, the demonization of North Korea in the textbooks for many people growing up in South Korea still remains a very powerful memory. So the presentation of a very able woman who seemed quite diplomatic in her outreach, her willingness to talk with President Moon Jae-in, or even her willingness potentially to have talked to Mike Pence, though he wasn't interested in doing so, alongside the athletes from North Korea, alongside this huge cheering section from North Korea, I think all contributed to giving a different picture to South Koreans of who North Korea is at this point. And North Korea is still very kind of personalistic in its politics, so that, yes, it has a central committee, a Politburo, a political structure, but so much of politics in North Korea today are centered around Kim Jong-un and his family. So to have a representative of his family at these Olympics sent a very powerful signal that this was not just a faction within North Korea that's interested in engagement. This is the regime itself. This is the family of Kim Jong-un. And so I think that indicates that this is comes from the very top, and that any offers, for instance, for Moon Jae-in to visit North Korea or for any further engagement to take place between the two Koreas has the imprimatur of Kim Jong-un himself.
Right, it's very serious. So Mike Pence, at the debut of the unified Korean ice hockey team, was perhaps alone in his refusal to stand up. I mean, I couldn't find a video that spanned the entire audience to see if he was the only person who refused to stand up. But being the highest representative of the U.S. To appear at the Winter Olympics and refusing to stand up for the unified Korean team was, you know, spoke volumes. Ahead of his trip there, we saw headlines such as Pence to confront North Korea's media narrative at the Olympics, or Mike Pence won't allow North Korea to hijack messaging at Winter Olympics. In retrospect, did he succeed, or did the North Korean leadership end up winning the media war, the PR war, if you will?
Well, you know, South Korea is not of a uniform opinion toward North Korea. I mean, there was a lot of pushback leading up to the Olympics, a considerable conservative response to Moon Jae-in's positions. For instance, a rejection of his project of having a unified Korean women's hockey team, and in some cases even displeasure at the fact that the two Koreas were going to march under a single flag. And, you know, I think Mike Pence reaches to that community in the same way that Donald Trump continues to reach to, what, 35, perhaps 40% of the American public. There's going to be this group that stands against any kind of engagement with North Korea. This group in South Korea believes that any kind of engagement with the regime up north merely kind of extends the lease on life of this regime. So in general, yes, Mike Pence did not come out well in this contest in the media. But remember, these media messages are interpreted in very different ways by different constituencies. Certainly the constituency that put Moon Jae-in into office as president, a constituency that has favored engagement with North Korea, that has relatively high hopes for the prospects for, if only slow motion, reunification with North Korea. Yes, they are going to see Mike Pence's behavior at the Olympics as scandalous, frankly. But for this other diehard conservative, anti-North Korean community in South Korea, my guess is they see Mike Pence as their hero in the same way that many people in the United States who still support Donald Trump see Mike Pence as their hero as well.
So let's talk about what comes next. You mentioned earlier that these diplomatic slaps, if you will, against North Korea don't necessarily mean that there won't be some kind of overture, some kind of attempt to talk. And in fact, the Washington Post put out a piece by Josh Rogan, who said that despite the mutual chilliness between U.S. and North Korean officials in South Korea last week, behind the scenes, real progress was made toward a new diplomatic opening that could result in direct talks without preconditions between Washington and Pyongyang. And apparently, Vice President Pence, in an interview on Air Force Two on his way home from the Winter Olympics, told this writer, Washington Post writer, that he had two substantive conversations with South Korean President Moon Jae-in during his trip, and that they agreed on terms for further engagement with North Korea. So, you know, it's hard to tell under Trump whether we're on the brink of nuclear war with North Korea or whether there will be some sort of standing down. What do you expect to happen after the Winter Olympics?
Well, the war, first of all, is taking place within the Trump administration before, you know, the outbreak of any actual war between the United States and North Korea. We've seen indications of this whenever a Trump administration official indicates, as Secretary of State Rex Tillerson did over the summer, that the United States is prepared for negotiations without preconditions. I mean, this is the key phrase, without preconditions, because hitherto the Trump administration and some previous administrations as well, including the Obama administration, and for a time the George W. Bush administration, insisted that North Korea would have to denuclearize completely before it could actually attract the United States to negotiations. A pretty significant precondition, given the fact that North Korea has nuclear weapons in part as a deterrent to prevent any country like the United States from invading it or bombing it. So to give up that deterrent would be, well, a rather significant calculation on their part. Now, every time this has been broached in the past, for instance, when Tillerson mentioned the possibility of negotiations without preconditions, there was forceful pushback from the Trump administration. And in fact, Tillerson was effectively persuaded, if you will, to recant that position. But obviously, it exists there in the administration. There are some there, like Tillerson, who believe that this is the only way out of the current crisis. And I should remind you that the strategic review that the Trump administration conducted in its first few months of the North Korea situation, military solution was not one of the recommendations. It was pressure, yes, like sanctions, but also engagement, which is actually no different from what Pence said in his interview with Josh Rogan. So I think we have these two positions within the Trump administration. Preference from Trump himself and someone like H.R. McMaster, his national security advisor, to pursue the so-called bloody nose approach, to have a preemptive strike against North Korea, to demonstrate U.S. resolve. But I think there's a much stronger position from the State Department and from other folks within the administration for negotiations as quickly as possible. And one would hope that they would use the inter-Korean momentum to bring the United States and North Korea together so that we would have two overlapping processes, inter-Korean discussions and then the nuclear question, largely handled, though not exclusively, by Washington and Pyongyang.
Well, John, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out a website where people can read your writings.
They can go to Foreign Policy in Focus, which is fpif.org.
Thank you so much, John. We'll, I'm sure, talk to you again in the future about this very issue.
Thank you for having me on the show.
John Pfeffer is the co-director of Foreign Policy in Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C., and a Tom Dispatch regular. We'll be discussing Mike Pence's performance at the Winter Olympics. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.